Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight.
I'm Buzz Knight. I'm the host of the Taking a Walk podcast series, and welcome to another edition of our Boston Gem series. Our series highlights some of the absolute coolest folks in this great city. Today is no exception, and I'm such a big fan of this gentleman. Now, first of all, if you're a regular listener to Taking a Walk, I appreciate your support. Share it with friends. Share it on social. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And please, write a review. So anyway, our special guest, he's the co-host, I love saying this too, Rich, of the nationally syndicated Boston-based number one show in the hub from 98.5, the sports hub, the TNR show, the Toucher and Rich show, Rich Shirtonly.
Hi.
I don't think I've ever used your last name.
It's a mouthful. I knew it was my place in the roll call when I was in high school because the teachers would just stop at Rich, and now I have the great Buzz Knight pronouncing it absolutely perfectly, so I'm happy. I couldn't be happier.
It's so great to be with you in the Seaport area. A beautiful day. We're taking a walk. Do you want to saunter a little bit?
Oh, let's saunter. And by the way, I feel like I looked at all of the places you guys have walked on the podcast, because I am a fan, and I realized as I was going through it, what an unoriginal bastard I am that I chose the Seaport. I think every third one that you have, someone in Boston was just like, yeah, let's just go to the Seaport. And you were so nice to go, okay, sure, whatever you want to do.
Well,
that's fine.
If it gives me a chance to get out of the house, I'm pretty happy. Okay, I mean, for me, this is a big event. But we also, we've had some Seaport episodes here.
Okay.
We've also had some public garden and sort of, you know, around the back bay episodes.
So you got some contact highs while doing it. That's good.
Which is beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so great to be with you. So why is this Toucher and Rich show so damn successful?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, listen, there were people... Fred and I, when we met, it was back at an old rock station in Atlanta, and I was basically like the fourth chair on a morning show. My name wasn't on. I was just like an intern that ended up doing dumb stunts that they putting me on full time, and Fred was this night jock, and we were kind of the two youngest ones who were kind of the kids in the back of the class, you know, mocking everybody and laughing about it. And we became good friends, and we said, hey, listen, if there's ever a chance to do a show together, you know, then we should take that chance. Fred, I ended up going to Dallas and learning under Kid Craddock and working on his show for a couple of years. Meanwhile, Fred started doing mornings out in at 99X in Atlanta. And then when Stern went to Satellite, we're like, wow, there's going to be a lot of stations that need morning shows. Maybe this is our chance. And I told Tony Berendini about it, and I gave him... You know, I told him we were gonna try to put this show together, and Fred and I had individual tapes, and him and I think it was Chris Olivero at the time flew us out to Phoenix one night, or actually three nights, where from midnight to 5 a.m, we did 5-hour shifts 3 nights in a row, gave them the tape, and they said, we like it, we're going to call you within the next 48 hours and tell you what city you're gonna work in. And
wow.
It was almost like the NFL draft. The phone rang and it was like, how would you like to go to Boston? And we're like, hey, let's do it. That sounds good to me. Why not? And sure enough, we ended up moving in, and you know, we got there right after the David Lee Roth debacle. And which, by the way, people have burned the tapes of David Lee Roth. You can't find it anywhere. And I wanted to show Fred because it was so awful. I remember hearing it one time. It was so ridiculously ill-conceived that I was just like, you have to hear this. And I remember when I showed up, I was like, hey, do you have any of those David Lee Roth tapes? Like, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. We don't find that funny around here. That was a dark time.
I know some people who were involved. I'll leave their names out at this point because they probably would rather. I'd like to stay friends with them. But they don't want to talk about it.
Oh, wow.
That's something they don't even want to bring up.
Isn't that crazy, too? It's like... You know, I guess wounds take a while to heal in the radio industry. You know, it's like I remember telling Fred, I'm like, oh, he's got bongo music, and then there's this guy with a guitar, like you can't understand what's going on, and he had his cousin on for like, his uncle on for like an entire half of his first show, and they talked nonsense, and it was great. You got to hear it, and then you know, poof, like it never existed.
Yeah. Well, go back to working with Kid Craddock. I only had the good fortune of meeting him one time, and it was just this delightful guy that you know, had this great aura around him. Not unlike you, by the way, in terms of the good aura. But what was it like working with Kid?
So it was funny because there was a radio consultant named Randy Lane, who is one of my favorite people in the radio industry.
Talent coach, right?
Talent coach. Yeah. He was working with my station 99X when I decided that I wanted to try to move on to something else. Like, I either wanted to, you know, start my own show, or, and I wasn't afraid to jump markets. Like, that was something that I knew if I wanted to do well in the industry, I'd have to do that. So Randy told Kid about me. And what was ironic was that Kid at the time was looking for a young Latin female. That was that he told Randy Lane, you know, listen, we want to get the young Latin female audience.
Is there, Rich, is there something I don't
know? Well, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, boy bands and, you know, and Menudo. So what happened was Randy went to Kid, and I guess just from what Randy told me, he goes, listen, this guy is not a young Latin female, but he is someone who I think you'll click with creatively. And Kid said, okay, fine. So he flew me out to Dallas, and I remember we met for dinner. And it was one of these things where we just started throwing like ideas out back and forth and just kind of spitballing like some fun segments. And by the end of dinner, we had like 15 like really ridiculously fun bits that were just invented over an hour and a half plate of tacos. And I remember, oh boy, this was crazy. He said, come into the show tomorrow morning. Just be there at 5:15. I said, all right. So 5:15, I'm there. And Kid gets there right before the show starts. 6 o'clock, walks in, goes on the air. He's brilliant, he's great. And then at the first break, he goes, okay, at exactly 6:40, we are going to do a new contest called Take My Mom to Mexico. He goes, I want you to write a song. I heard you can play guitar, and I want it ready by 6:40. I had 25 minutes to write a funny song about taking my mom to Mexico. I was like, okay. So I went in there and I wrote this dumb song, and I want you to perform it on the air at 6:40. Like, okay. So I go in there and they do it, and they're like, all right, thank you, mystery mariachi guy or whatever. And then after that was done, he goes, okay, they just discovered life on Mars or a signal on Mars. I want you to write a skit for all of us to perform with the three parts where I'm going to be talking to aliens and Al and Kelly are going to be aliens. I'm like, okay. And he goes, and I want it by 7:20. Like, oh my God. So once again, 25 minutes to write this script. And I wrote the script, and I guess it ended up being funny. They liked it. And that's the way the first morning was. It was like, what do you got and how fast can you be funny?
Wow.
And it was great because it touched that part, that creative part that I love. Like that thing that just gets you, makes you feel alive. Yeah. And then I remember after that, we hung out after the show and did the same thing. We just spitballed stuff back and forth and back and forth. And so I got a call. I flew back home, got a call 2 days later, and they said, he wants you to be on the show. And that was it.
Wow.
And I flew out there, and I knew that this was a great opportunity to learn from one of the best, learn syndication. And it was after my 2.5 years there, that's when the whole Stern thing happened, and Fred and I remained friends. And yeah, and that was the end of it. But Kid was just a great dude. Like, he's that kind of radio nerd that I love. Like, and that we geeked out together over, like, Phil Hendry. He was, like, our favorite. I think we both are, like two people who just, like, we mentioned Phil Hendry, and both of us went, oh, that guy's a god, radio
right.
god. And we would I'd find bits of his and I'd give them to him, and we would just like geek out over Phil Hendry. And I learned so much from him, and it was just one of these guys too that even though he's been successful for so long, he never lost that fire.
Right.
Like he never, you know, there's a lot of people in radio, and I never want to be that kind that just, they get successful and they get kind of lazy. Kid was not that. He was the opposite of that. And out of anything I could take from Kid and my time with him, that might have been my favorite, is that every day was like the first day he was doing radio.
So, Rich, what was the breakthrough moment in Boston for the Toucher and Rich show? That one moment that you remember that really was like, this thing broke through, we arrived, we're here to stay, and we're only going to grow?
Well, I'll tell you what. There was, when we first started, it was at BCN. And we were supposed to take over mornings after the David Lee Roth thing happened. That was kind of the sales pitch, and we were like, great, we expected to. But then CBS did something very smart, and at least smart for us, because it was an advantage for us, and they got Opie and Anthony, and they brought them in the mornings. And then it was nice. Then we kind of got a buffer. We went afternoons, and you know, Opie and Anthony and us kind of had a mutual respect, and they were really nice to us, and their fans kind of became our fans. But we didn't know if anyone was listening. Like, when Fred and I came here with two of our friends, Crash and Adolfo, like, we didn't know anybody. It was literally us. We were like this mini gang. And we would go out just together. We would drink together. We would, you know, hang out with our families together. And we really didn't do a ton outside of it. And then about 3 months after we were there, we did this thing called, oh, this is so dated, the MySpace party, which was like, the whole concert was like, hey, you ever like heard there's a party and you didn't know who was going to be there? Well, now with MySpace, you can see who's going to actually be at the party because they can sign up for it or whatever it was. And I remember we threw this MySpace party, and when we showed up, it was at the Rack. Remember the Rack?
Yeah, sure.
It was at the Rack. And there was a line down the street to get in. And I remember when we got out of the car that BCN got for us, when we got out, I mean, it felt like, I mean, we felt people yelling our names and stuff. Like, we had no clue that people were actually listening to us. And the ratings hadn't reflected it at that point. Like, we were kind of okay, but we had this crazy diehard group that had these message boards that they started up, and like some of the characters that we would meet, people were quoting them. We had a Halloween party later that year, and people were dressing as like Adolfo, and there was like, you know, guys were dressing as like, we had this character that we met outside of Fenway named the Chili Guy, and people were dressing like him. I gotta be honest, it was one of those things where it was the first time that I realized that something that like me and Fred had created was truly connecting with people. And if only the ratings at that point could have reflected that, it was like we knew the passion was there, and that, you know, that's when I knew that something special was happening.
But you just mentioned honest.
Yes.
And honest is a core of the TNR show, isn't it?
It is. I mean, there's certain things that I'm not good enough at faking takes or passion or something like that. Like, if there's... I remember, Buzz, when they first told us that BCN was going to flip to the Sports Hub. And it was Mark Hannon and Mike Thomas. And I have to be honest, when they sat us down, and it was great, they told us long before almost anybody else, because, you know, I'll say this about those two guys. They were on our side from day one. And, like, you know, they knew that this station, even though it was going to flip and be, you know, a sports talk thing, they had this vision that these guys, you know, we want something different. this kind of rock show. These guys do love sports. Like, they knew I was a huge Celtics fan, and obviously Fred is, you know, although Fred's a Jets fan, but it's still, it was like he was passionate about it. And they said, you know, we think this could work, but when they told us it was gonna be a sports talk thing, I told them, I was like, I can't, I hate sports talk. I'm not kidding. I told them, I was like, there's not a format I hate more than sports talk radio. I said, because all I was really exposed to at the time was, you know, like WEI, and, you know, that was a station where they were just so angry about everything. Like, you know, the Red Sox could have won the World Series, and it was like, well, can they do it again next year? I don't think they can. I'm like, enjoy it, man.
Right.
And I just remember there being so much anger, and I told them that. I'm like, I can't do that kind of radio. I can't fake being angry about stuff that makes me happy. And I think it was Mark Hannon. He said, well, that's why we want you. We want you guys to be who you are and to not fake your passion about something that you're not passionate about, and not play down your passion about something that you are. So that's kind of where the honesty comes from. You could hear it. There's certain times where there's huge stories where Fred and I would just go, I'm sick of talking about this. I don't want to do this anymore. I know that we're supposed to be talking about the Patriots. We talked about it for 3 hours. I want to talk about something stupid like fart court, you know? And so,
okay, so we have an audience beyond the borders of the U.S.
Okay.
Oh, awesome. For this podcast, there's two or three Czechoslovakians possibly listening right now.
Oh, what's up, Czechs?
Maybe, you know, I'm sure there's the Russian Federation probably listening somewhere. Uh-oh. You don't have to you say a word if you want.
Well, I know the end of Rocky IV, so if that makes any sense.
Right.
If I can change.
But we have, so Australia, Great Britain, Ireland, all over the place.
Yeah.
So if someone's never heard the Toucher and Rich show,
okay,
how do you describe it?
This is going to sound so consultant-like, but it's true. We're friends first, who are just happen to be talking about the stuff that's going on in our lives, which in Boston is overrun with sports. We are nowhere near what you think when you think a sports talk show. As a matter of fact, I've always said we're the Touch and Rich show that happens to be on a sports talk station. And in our syndication, we're on rock stations and stuff like that. It's like, sports is part of who we are, but man, sometimes you get bored by it. So you just, it's basically anything that's on our mind we'll talk about. And we're also like 14-year-olds. I mean, as I was saying, we have a bit called Farcourt, which for some reason is one of the, I can't believe it, but like even like people my dad's age will come up to me and say that they were laughing at it because, you know, we'll take a clip of somebody who was on TV and you'll hear a sound and someone will say, was that a fart? And we'll like, you know, play the music and pretend we're judges. It's the dumbest thing in the world.
You actually get paid for that bit.
Believe it or not. I think that's
the beautiful thing.
I think that's what was submitted to the Marconis when we won that year.
That's right.
So.
That's the beautiful part. But I dare say, beyond your description, isn't it a lot just about, the art of mocking?
Kind of, you know,
each
mocking,
other,
but you have to be self-deprecating too. Yeah, we know we're idiots, and
not
so
you. I'm saying the idiots in the world, whether it be sports or entertainment or whatever, right?
It's true, and like
it's the art of mocking.
It's mocking, but you know, and Fred is the one thing I'll say a million things about Fred, but one of my favorite things about him is that when he goes off on rants, there's no one better. There's literally no one better in radio than when he gets fired up. He's just and I now, after all these years of working with him, know absolutely every button to press when he's doing that to stoke that flame. There's certain things I'm pretty good at, and there's certain things Fred's pretty good at. That's something he excels at. I would put him up against anyone in radio when he gets fired up about something. And sometimes it's mocking, but it's always mocking in like a, you know, like, well, not always, but for the most part, it's somewhat of a playful tone, I guess, because we're not perfect. We're kind of dumb. Yeah, we call ourselves that, and we're dumbasses too. And it happens a lot. And I think that, you know, because we're such idiots, it almost gives us permission to, you know, call out when other people are as well, if that makes any sense.
It makes total sense. But, you know, listen, it's not like athletes are all well-behaved and normal.
Oh, sure,
right?
Sure. I mean, and there's certain people that we have had, you know, in our sights for ever and ever. And sometimes, some of them will have on the show, and they'll end up being fantastic. And it's like, all right, well, you're great. You get the joke. You kind of go along with it, too. But, yeah, sure. Yeah, and that we do that with... We do that with every, you know, athletes, celebrities, ourselves. Yeah, we definitely mock a decent amount.
Regular schmoes from Brookline.
Well, that place is like that is. I've never seen a city like that. Like Brookline is just that's. So, for the people who don't know, in Australia and Czechoslovakia and Russia, there's this town that is just a mix of. It's the pit of anger, okay? I've never seen an angrier city in my life than Brookline, Massachusetts. It's like, I don't know why there's so much anger there, but it's almost like this young kind of progressive people are trying to move into a place that's filled with old money and people who've lived there forever, and it's just conflict and anger. And like the weather kind of sucks up here, and that just makes it worse because the houses are crammed, and then there's like these people who think that they're better than everyone else. All I know is that there was a leaf blower ordinance, and these people were trying to like outlaw all these leaf blowers, and I was like, you know what, I gotta get the 911 calls. I ended up going to the police station and finding a treasure trove of the most ridiculous, like, entitled 911 calls ever. Like, one woman called 911 because there was a boy across the street at the baseball field kicking dirt. He was on a baseball field during the day across the street kicking dirt, and she called 911 on him. And these people who worked the dispatch are just saints among us, that they have to deal with these people over and over again. One person called 911 because someone at Trader Joe's was laughing at them. So that was a 911 call, and that guy ended up calling back twice. And then there's the funny ones where someone accidentally, for Halloween, handcuffed himself to the bed, and then the cops let him go, and then the very next night he had to call back because he did it once again and he learned his lesson. So
you can't make this up.
You can't make it up. And that bit's become a hit because it's real. People who have been there can identify. People who've had to work in that area have had to identify with all of that. So there you go. And even the syndicated markets, they get it just because, hey, it's every area's got a town like that. But just here, it's magical. It's magically angry, you know?
So how do you guys plan the show?
Okay, so like...
No, this is just you and I talking.
Sure. So, just us. And the Czechoslovakians Russians. What we'll do is that, okay, let's say that there's some big thing, sporting event that we're going to be, like, watching. Let's say that there's a Patriots game or whatever. We'll know that the next day, because I do too, people are going to want to talk about it. I find it interesting. So sure, let's book a guest, or, you know, like a Patriots guest. And then after that, it's just... you know what it really is that I'll fill in a bunch of boxes with like stuff that like I find ridiculous or I'm passionate about and I want to talk about, and then Fred will come up with something off the cuff. But I do a ton of production. Like when I think of like a segment, I think of it on different levels. I think of like the story I'm going to tell. I think of you know, whether it's going to go anywhere, what will make it better, what production will make it sound funnier or more interesting. You know, what will cut through just the noise of two idiots just talking? You know, is there some sort of element that gives it punch without being overproduced and sounding like, you know, a clown factory or something like that? So that's kind of how we do it. And sometimes after the show, we'll kick around some ideas. And sometimes we're so punch drunk that we'll think of an idea so stupid that we have to do it. And it could fit, and many times the bits have failed horribly. But the one thing I love about Fred is that he doesn't care if something fails, because if it fails, it's funny. If it's so bad, it's great, then it's great. If it's just boring, that's one thing. But if it's gonna fail spectacularly, you better fail spectacularly. We did a bit one time, with, even if I explain this, it's so dumb and awful. So Teddy Bruschi was going to be in studio, the big tough Teddy Bruschi. And he was not for us. He was going to record some commercials. And we were just punch drunk, just so stupid. And like, we could try to think of the next day, like, okay, so Teddy Bruschi's here. What are we going to do? I don't know. I said, what if I went in and asked him to recite the lyrics of Rush? And we called the bit Getty Bruschi. Like, Getty Lee, Rush, Teddy Bruschi. And everyone just looked at me like, you idiot. And I was just like, hey man, if he says no, the story's kind of funny, asking one of the meanest guys or the toughest guys in the NFL to recite lyrics to Rush songs. And I could tell the story, but he looked like, I was like, idiots. And sure enough, we went into the studio and we're like, hey Teddy, I'm Toucher, I'm Rich, hey, how's it going? Do you know the band Rush? And he goes, kind of. And I said, hey, we're gonna do this bit called Getty Bruschi, because the lead singer's called Getty Lee and you're Teddy Bruschi, and we're gonna have you read the lyrics, then we're gonna put to music and you'll have to guess what song it is. And he looked at us like we had 3 foreheads, and then he went, yeah, sure, whatever. And I was like, oh my god. And so we got him to do it, and so we had this bit called Getty Bruschi, which ended up being, as I said, it sounds this dude like way funnier than it was, because, you know, he's doing like, you know, modern day warrior, mean pride, today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride. And it was just the dumbest thing ever. And there you go, Buzz. So I'm rambling now.
No, I mean, one of the cores of the show is it's not a one-size-fits-all model. You're not doing bits that are, across 60 markets done by other morning shows.
Sure.
That you're just putting your stamp on. You guys are doing your thing in your way.
Well, I sound weird saying this, but I don't listen to radio. I do like some of the shows on our station. It's not that I don't like them. I love a lot of shows. But I kind of got to stop, because I remember when I first got into radio, I was trying to do other people's bits. And I remember not feeling great afterwards. Because either A, it wasn't as good as the other people did it, or B, it wasn't me. Like, it wasn't my sense of humor, and I just was desperate for a segment to fill. And I guess maybe when I became more confident in our, you know, ability to fill time, that I didn't have to do that anymore. But I can't, I don't want also other people's thoughts in my head. You know, it's, I can't listen to other morning shows. I love and respect a lot of the people on other morning shows. It has nothing to do with my admiration for them, but I just kind of try to do everything I can to make it so it's always Toucher and Rich and not Toucher and Rich with the voice of Adam Carolla or somebody else in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's look, I think you guys know who you are, and you know, you make no bones about it. You know?
And the one thing I'll say is that, and this wasn't by choice, but you know, we've had to be brutally honest with people about what's going on in our own lives before, and it's not always been pretty, because I can't. It's like I have a feeling that Fred and I can't keep secrets that well, or will just kill us. Like, it's like, it's so, you know, we've both had some heavy stuff happen, and the listeners have been amazing, and they've helped us through all of it, and that's been probably one of the, you would talk about the moment where you say, wow, this seems like we've really met, when you are able to just share your soul like that, and instead of people mocking you for it, they're helpful, and they really, you know, are there for you. That's crazy. That's when you really know that, you know, that you got a special listener.
Well, especially how, you know, when your wife is you know, yeah, doing the marathon, yeah, run, and, you know, everybody's behind her.
That was,
you know,
huge. That was massive. And the whole time where I was missing for like a month and a half because she was in really, really bad shape, and like, you know, stuff like that. It was funny. It was like I would see all of the tweets that would come in, and people who were like wishing her best, and she ended up pulling through and stuff like that, and which was good. And you know, we had her on the air and all that because she was comfortable with that. And so, yeah, it's been good. But you also, after that, you shut the hell up about your private life until something else bad happens, and then you can, you know, maybe talk about it again.
But so, it adds to a level of engagement with the audience.
Sure.
You know? I mean, it's for real. So you're on in a bunch of other markets now, right?
You've got, yeah,
how many affiliates?
So we're on, I think it's officially 7. So it's not like a ton, but we just launched, and you know, like Portland, Springfield, a bunch in New Hampshire. We got one in Vermont, but we're hoping to expand. We just launched this, I think, in, oh God, when was it? Was it March? I think was.
Yeah, it feels like that's about,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think it was March. So, you know, but this is something we've always wanted. You know, we've always wanted to be syndicated. And as I said, you know, coming from the school of Kid Craddock, I learned how to do it the right way, and it's been cool so far.
Well, if you get out of this taking a walk interview, maybe a Czechoslovakian affiliate or something, can I get a little shekel out
of
it?
There's no question. Buzz, you are going to get your 3%. No question.
Uh-oh.
What is it, rubles? I'm not sure.
Sure, the valuation is going to be terrific. But continued success, keep kicking ass, and thanks for taking a walk, Rich.
Well, Buzz, let me just tell you this before I let you go. You have been one of our biggest supporters. So you were always there. And that was a scary time for us. Like, switching from one company to the next, you don't know if everybody hates you. But Buzz, you were, like, I mean, and that was a really scary time for everyone. You were the calming effect on all of us. And so having a guy like you in our corner means everything. So Buzz, if you need me to do anything for you, if you need me to do another podcast, you need me to kill a guy, I am there for you, Buzz. Forever in your debt.
You guys are the best. I appreciate it, Rich. You're the best. Thank you for taking a walk here on this beautiful day in the seaport. We saw some people walking funny, but we didn't stop and mock them. Maybe next time.
No. I would not. The walking funny, I walk funny enough. So we don't need to be mocking people for that.
Keep kicking ass.
Thanks, Buzz.
Taking a Walk with Buzz Knight is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.